putting some clothes away, turned around, and then he was having a massive seizure. After the biopsy, again, they rang me like 2 days later. It was like, you need to come in. They just said, go and enjoy the time you've got left together. Like, that was it. We never spoke about him dying because that wasn't an option. When he did pass, it was like, oh, you actually have to sort this out now, Kels.
Yeah.
And for us, it was a lifesaver to have that cover because it just took that stress off when he was diagnosed that we didn't have to find the money for the mortgage. I'm never going to be that Kelsey I was before. Look at me. I am living proof that the worst things do happen. Tom was 33 when he died. 33. We're not all promised tomorrow. So live for today and seize every opportunity.
No one ever thinks it'll happen to them. But when it does, love, money, and plans all collide. This is Pretty Covered, the podcast about what happens next. Before we begin, just a quick note to say that this episode contains discussion around grief and loss, which some people might find upsetting. So please just take care whilst listening. Welcome to Pretty Covered, the show where we talk honestly about when things in life don't go to plan. In this first episode, we're joined by Kelsey Parker, a mother of two, host of Mum's the Word podcast, and a woman who is no stranger to grief. Many will know Kelsey as the wife of Tom Parker, member of the band The Wanted. Tom sadly passed away in 2022 after an 18-month battle with a brain tumour. Since then, Kelsey has faced the unimaginable, raising two young children, rebuilding her life, and most recently, dealing with the loss of her son, Phoenix, who was born sleeping. Today, we'll talk about life after loss, how to talk about death, managing as a single mum, and preparing for the unthinkable. So, Kelsey, hello. Welcome to the first episode.
Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute joy to have you here. And as I kind of alluded to in the intro, you've been through a lot.
Just a bit.
Yeah.
Just a bit.
I know you talk about it a lot, but having someone else say it about you in front of you.
You listen to that and you go, oh my God, like, I have actually been through so much. But I think when you're living it, it's just your life.
I want to talk to you about Tom.
Yeah.
And how you two got together. You were pretty young, weren't you?
Yes, I was 19 when I met Tom.
Okay.
And I met him outside of a nightclub in London.
Yeah.
Like,
what nightclub? Not that we're doing any promos, but...
Well, so I don't think it even exists anymore. So it was called Aura Nightclub. And it was really weird because I saw him outside and I literally grabbed my best friend and was like, oh my God, I'm in love with him. And she went, what are you talking about? Bear in mind, I'd never even spoken to him before. And then literally got talking to Tom.
Yeah.
He did say to me, because obviously I was like, oh, what do you do? And he went, oh, I'm in a band.
And he was already pretty successful by this point?
No.
Okay.
No, this was his first night out as the band, but they had no name. So I went to him, oh, well, what's your band called then? He went, we've not got a name. And I was like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, right. You're in a band type thing.
Yeah, literally. It was like, bye. But really randomly, he didn't take my number. He took my name.
Okay.
Because he thought it was like really cool Facebook vibes. So then he tracked me down on Facebook and then messaged me and then...
And then
I would say the rest is history, but it was actually a long period to actually then until we actually got together officially.
Wasn't it? There was a bit of back and forth.
Well, yeah, he'd just got into the band, his vision of what he thought being in a band should look like. But I was always there for Tom. So I think because he met me before he became famous, he knew that he could always trust me and rely on me.
You were together for a number of years, weren't you?
And
you
13 were there. 13 years.
13 years. Yeah. You almost kind of grew up, you became adults together. Was he the same age?
Yes. No, what was Tom? 2 years older than me? So yeah, we grew up together, which is really hard, obviously, when you do lose someone, because we've been through so much together and also the most extreme experience. Because he'd just got into that band and obviously the success of The Wanted was like mind-blowing. Like obviously smashed it in America. They had massive number one hits here. They were everywhere at like one point. They were massive.
They were like the soundtrack to like my uni days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think Glad You Came was just literally the anthem, weren't it, really? For everyone.
Well, I'm sure he's glad you came to that club
that
night.
That was it.
10 years later. You're about 28. What was everyday life like for you?
The band had finished and Tom was always really driven
yeah.
for success and money and supporting us. So at that point, he was like doing reality shows. We got married when I was 28. And then obviously after that, we wanted to have the babies.
Yeah.
And really, like, Tom was my best friend, my soulmate, my, like, absolute everything. Everyone used to say we were the boy and girl version of each other.
Really?
And sometimes that doesn't work in a relationship. But for me and him, I was probably a little bit more laid back than him. When we first met, I actually would have had children probably earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think you get to that time, you'll be like, oh, I'm not ready yet to have children.
Yeah. So I feel at the moment just, you know, kicking that can slightly down the road.
Yeah. But I think you have to do it when the right time is for you.
And when did you two then have that conversation and you were like, okay, the success of the band had kind of like reached its heights and then he was doing other things and you were working as well,
right? Yeah, and I think with me and Tom, I've always supported Tom in what he wanted to do. And he was the type of person that he always had an idea or an invention or we had a girl band, we had a clothing line. We had so many, he was an entrepreneur.
Mm.
But with now, obviously, when you reflect on things, he would never have been able to do what he wanted to do without me.
Mm.
Everything involved me, supporting him, being there behind him and getting him to his goal. And I think even with, you know, when he was in the band, his success was because he had me at home supporting him.
Were you a really good team?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, even my friends would be like, oh my God, are you not worried that he'll cheat on you? Or, you know, all these little worries in life because him being in that band. I think I, again, was one of the only people that could actually be with someone who was in a successful band. Because I am laid back and I was like, look, at the end of the day, they're going to cheat on you. They're going to cheat on you. Like,
Yeah. And you trusted him, right?
Yeah.
And
he'd have had to tell me. He'd have had to ring me up and go, do you think this is a good idea? No, Tom.
Yeah. Let's fast forward to about like 2019, 2020.
Yeah.
You've got your daughter, Aurelia.
Yeah.
And what did life look like for you guys day to day?
Well, obviously, when she was 9 months, we actually went into lockdown.
Yeah.
So that was a crazy time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
COVID, lockdown.
And you were on maternity kind of leave at the time. Were you taking a break from work?
No, well, everything was shut, wasn't
it?
That was it. Like, we were self-employed. Yeah. It was like, what even is a job? Yeah, and I actually had fallen pregnant with Bodhi. I was pregnant and Tom was driving me crazy because I definitely think Tom was on the ADHD spectrum.
Yeah.
So by telling him to stay indoors, all he actually wanted to do was go out. So it was really hard. Like, he'd done ration adventures. He'd go out every day. Getting his eggs.
Russian Adventures. I was about to say, is that another reality TV program?
No, it should have been. It actually should have been. If they filmed him in lockdown, I think I've got so many DMs and messages in lockdown. People going, oh my God, I feel so sorry for you. Like, Tom is just on one. I'm like, no, he is actually on one.
What, tried to basically go into the shop because things were being like sold out and trying to
so he'd go and find beans and eggs every day and he'd be Tom going to different stores and getting this. It was called Ration Adventures. He'd be like, oh, day 28. I'm out again. Toilet
paper.
This
is so good.
Like, Tom was hilarious.
Laughter formed quite a big part of your relationship and in lockdown and everything.
Yeah, and I think with me and Tom, we shared the same passion in performing. So, you know, we were making TikToks. We always did stuff together. And you know, I've had a performing arts school since I was 19. And Tom was such a massive part of that with me. He'd come and direct the kids. And, you know, when it would be show day, Tom would be there, would be having a massive argument because obviously he thought he knew best.
Obviously, Tom, famous for being a singer in a band, playing guitar. But actually, you went to Italia Conti. You are the talented one. So
Tom was a better singer than me. I will give him that. But when it came to dance, even he got into Greece on a UK tour to play Danny Zuko. And they actually took him into training for the dance way before anyone else. He was like, do you know I'm in rehearsals already and no one else is? I'm like,
on his own.
And yeah, I was like, because everyone's just going to rock up, Tom, and they're going to learn it in a week. And he was like, no. I went, honestly. So he would come home and show me the moves and then we'd do it in the kitchen and he'd get so annoyed with me.
That you'd know it.
That I'd know the routine. I was like, but Tom, this is what I trained to do. Like, it would be worrying if I couldn't pick that up.
So you're in lockdown. You've got Aurelia.
Yeah.
You're pregnant with Bodhi. And then everything kind of changes.
Yes.
What was the moment that you realised something maybe wasn't quite right?
Tom actually knew something wasn't right. Tom was so intuitive and like he listened to his body and he knew something was wrong. But Tom was so dramatic. So for me, I'm like, is there something wrong? And also, I just think, what's the point in worrying? Let's worry when actually there's time to worry. So he took himself to the hospital and said, there's something wrong with me.
In what way did he know something
didn't
was wrong?
Didn't feel right. Like,
really?
I don't know. He just knew something wasn't right. He didn't feel great. So he took himself to the hospital and then they booked him in for a scan. Obviously, where I was pregnant and I thought he was ill, we actually slept in different rooms. And I think the night we slept in a different room, he actually had a seizure and he'd woke up and he'd bit his tongue. And then we all went on holiday. He'd had the scan. And then when we went on the holiday, he had a massive seizure when we was on the holiday. He went into hospital, obviously COVID as well. So it was, I'm heavily pregnant.
And are you abroad at this point?
No, because obviously you couldn't go abroad. Could
no,
you?
Of course, a staycation.
Oh, yeah. We were in Norfolk.
Okay.
And then he just didn't feel right. And I came upstairs and it was just so weird because I put Aurelia on the bed with him. And then he was going to me, oh my God, Kels, my hands are sweating. Literally, I was putting some clothes away, turned around, and then he was having a massive seizure. But thankfully, I was in the house with all my family. So my auntie and my stepdad ran in. They sorted Tom out. Obviously, I took Aurelia out of the room. And then the ambulance came. They were like, they didn't even know whether they were going to take him into hospital. Ended up taking him. And then he was there a few days. But obviously, with it being COVID, I wasn't really allowed to go and see him. And then I was on my way up to see him. The doctors went in, pulled the curtain around and told him that they had a brain tumour with no one there. It was literally brutal. He rang me and he went crying his eyes out and he was like, Kels, they said I've got a brain tumour. And I was like, right, I'm on my way up now anyway, so we'll sort it. Thankfully, I was with my stepdad. He came in, had a chat with them. But yeah, that's when he was first diagnosed with a brain tumour. But then we didn't know what type of brain tumour. We was in Norfolk. So got him transferred to King's, came back, and then I literally within a few days he was up there having a biopsy. After the biopsy, again, they rang me like 2 days later and was like, you need to come in. Like, I sat in a room with him, heavily pregnant. My best friend is called Kelsey. So Kelsey was with us because she was there just like taking notes.
Yeah.
And she said, I just looked at you and you just had beads of sweat just pouring off you. And they obviously said to us, he's got a stage 4 glioblastoma. It's probably the worst brain tumour you can get. And Tom was pushing for a prognosis. And I just, within me, just knew that he didn't need a prognosis.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, no, we don't need a prognosis. Like, where's that getting you?
Yeah.
And he would be at home ticking it off a calendar, I think, if he'd actually had a prognosis. So they just said, look, just go and enjoy the time you've got left together. That was it.
Because I know you're quite an intuitive person as well. Did you know how short it would be?
I didn't know how short it would be. I knew that I needed to go home and research and throw everything possible at it. And that's what I did.
Yeah.
In our relationship, for a long period of time, Tom was in charge. Tom sorted out all the bills. Tom sorted out the house. Tom sorted out a lot of things. And literally overnight, our roles reversed. And he was always into like researching and telling me information. And I'd be up until like 4 o'clock in the morning and reached out to everyone. I mean, I don't think a day went by that we didn't speak to a doctor from a different country. Like the first couple of, well, probably
really?
The first month.
Yeah.
We would make a joke and be like, oh, where are we ringing tonight, Tom? Because he wanted to speak to the best people in the world.
You wanted to exhaust all avenues, didn't you?
Yeah.
I guess you just didn't see it coming.
Life is life. And this is the whole thing of life. You never know what's going to happen.
You can never imagine something like that being said to you. You are heavily pregnant.
I was 35 weeks pregnant. Then I ended up going into labour early. Just was having a bit of stress. I think Bodie was like, can I get out of here? Because my mum is so stressed right now. So Bodie ended up, coming 38 weeks. And that was just horrendous. Because again, COVID times, went into hospital. A lot of husbands weren't allowed in the hospital. But for us, it was like because Tom was in treatment. So Tom was in active treatment, having chemo and radio at the time. So I actually waited till the last possible minute to go in. And I was like, Tom, we're going to go in at this time. I think it was like 3 a.m. We went in and that's it. We didn't leave until the baby was there. And even for Tom that night, I said, you need to go home because you need to get sleep because you are going to treatment tomorrow. That's it. So he had one day off of treatment to have Bodhi.
How did you cope with that?
I don't know. I don't know how I did it, but I just did. And now I look back and I think, wow, you did get through that.
Because you are a resilient person. Did you always think you were a resilient person, though?
I don't know. I don't know. People ask me that, but it's so hard. But I just think whatever life throws at me, I just can get on with it. I didn't have any other option but to get on with it. Yeah. It was like, you have got two kids. You have got a husband who has now got an aggressive brain tumour. So you have just got to get on with it. And if you want him to survive, you need to do this research. You need to look after your kids and you need to hold the family together. And that's what I did. I had to step up.
Yeah, it's one step after the other, isn't it? And you do cope because we have to.
Yeah, like, I had no other option than to cope. And also, my family were amazing. Tom's family were amazing. Like, everyone helped me. But I am a control freak too. And I wanted to do everything. I wanted to do everything for Tom. I wanted him to know that she's going above and beyond for me. And I did. And I know that I've done absolutely everything for Tom through the whole time. Through the 18 months, I did absolutely everything for him.
What happened once he passed? What was that aftermath like?
It was the worst time of my life. But it's everything else. So you don't think of everything that goes with it, the bills.
The admin.
Like, I always said, I wouldn't have wished that.
On anyone,
because he done everything for me as well. So it was like, oh, thanks, Tom, I now have got to sort this. And you know what? We never spoke about it. We never spoke about him dying because that wasn't an option. So, and also with Tom, he couldn't go there for death. He didn't want to talk about it. So we just remained as positive as possible. So I think when he did pass, it was like, oh, you actually have to sort this out now, Kels.
It's quite a mess, isn't it? When someone passes, there's so much paperwork, there's so many documents.
And you like, think I had
two young children. Yeah.
But even when Tom was diagnosed, we had critical cover.
Yeah.
So I had had Bodhi.
Yeah.
I'd just given birth and I had to go into the bank to do the critical cover for them to pay the mortgage. And I had a baby on the boob.
Really? So you had critical cover, like life insurance in place before Tom was diagnosed?
It was one thing that I was like, well, Tom. He was like, we need this cover, Kels. So we did have cover.
Did Tom earn most of the money? And was it for both of you just in case something happened? You just decided to get it? Well, he decided that it was a good idea.
No, I think, do you know what? When we was actually getting our mortgage, he would always ask my mum everything.
Yeah.
He'd always
Mums know
like,
everything.
Diane. So I think when we went in, my mum was like, get the cover. You need the cover.
Yeah.
And for us, it was a lifesaver to have that cover because it just took that stress off when he was diagnosed that we didn't have to find the money for the mortgage.
So it literally helped you financially. It gave you payouts because of his diagnosis.
Yeah. And then you're not worrying about going, right, how am I going to pay this mortgage? I wanted to put all the money we had into his treatment, which that allowed us to do that. We didn't have the added stress of finding the mortgage money.
Definitely. You never know these decisions that you take, what things you take out, what ends up, because some people just see it as an extra cost, right, that you're paying every month and hopefully you never have to use in a way. But if you hadn't have had it, then what
you
would
know, you hope you won't have to use it. But cancer is now on the rise. I would recommend to anyone to get life cover or get, you know, even after Tom passed, I then had to do my own finances. And one of my first things I did was get life insurance. So yes, I know now that the kids are okay.
Yeah.
Because it's all them things, you know, even looking at the finances for the kids, because Tom wanted them kids to be okay. And he really had a plan in his head of what he wanted.
Mm.
And I'm now trying to live up to the plan that Tom had for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was... they're in private school. He wanted them to go to private school. So I'm sacrificing a lot for them to be in that school.
Yeah.
Which that's what he wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's now possible. How are the kids, can I ask? How, I mean, now Bodhi's 4
yeah,
and Aurelia's 6 now.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did they cope through that time as well?
Do you know what? I feel like when Tom passed, they actually coped with that. Because I think they were younger and it was, they were so innocent. And I just said to them, and obviously it breaks people's heart when I say, I said to them, look, daddy's dead. He's not coming back. And we won't see dad again now. When I actually was going to the hospice with Tom, I said to Aurelia, the angels are going to come and take dad and we won't see him anymore. And she was okay with that. And I think they accepted it. And I think because I was there, they were a bit like, well, mum's here. So it's okay. But, you know, I've gone through another loss since and I wouldn't say that it's been the same experience with the children this time around. But they were younger, so they just accepted what I told them.
Yeah.
And that's why you have got to be careful how you do talk to the children, because I did take a lot of advice in what I should say to them. Because a lot of people say, don't tell them that your dad, that Tom's gone to sleep, because then they're going to be worried because they're never going to see him again now. So it's like, well, hang on, if I go to sleep,
yeah,
am I not going to come back?
Am I ever going to wake up? Yeah.
And they overthink everything. And you definitely hit a stage in childhood that you become obsessed with death.
Really?
But I remember as a little girl being worried about dying. Yeah.
Do you think we talk about
maybe
death?
I knew that I was just going to have a life full of death. People dying around me.
Don't say that. Premonitions were there then.
Yeah.
But do you think we talk about death enough?
No, we don't. No one wants to talk about death. We're all so scared to talk about the topic of death. But when you've lived it, like I have, I always say that Tom actually taught me not to be scared of death. Because if I could have a death like Tom, I would be so happy. Because he had no pain. When he passed over, he was just so calm, relaxed, surrounded by love. He made me not scared. And I know that that's why we never spoke about death with him, because he was so petrified. But when he actually died, I could just imagine him leaving his body and going, was that it? I was so worried and it was that. Because he made it look so peaceful.
Thank you so much for sharing, Kelsey, because I don't think I've ever heard anyone talk about death in this way. And like, I think you're making it less scary, less intimidating for people. The fact that, you know, you said amongst all, he actually had a very peaceful death. And like, I mean, I'm getting a bit emotional even just thinking about this, but the fact
But when he got to that point, so when he went into a hospice, I knew that the fight was coming to an end for me. I couldn't save him. So then my fight was, how can I make him have the most peaceful death? So that's what I did. I looked at it from a different point of view and thought, how can we make this passing nice for him?
Yeah.
And I did that for Tom.
It sounds like you couldn't have done any more, and you couldn't have done more for your children and Tom in that moment. Can I ask, how long after Tom passing did you start to feel kind of like Kelsey, like true Kelsey again?
I think brave Kelsey would say a month, that she went back out and she was like, I'm going to work and I'm doing this. But also, I think I've had a lot of judgment, but you've not walked in my shoes. And okay, we did get critical and it did pay out, but my husband thought it would be a good idea for actually us to buy a property. So I have got a mortgage to pay for. So thanks, Tom, for that. So I then had to go out to work to provide.
Yeah.
I became Tom and was like, you need to go to work, Kelsey, because you now have a mortgage to pay.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I'm never going to be that Kelsey I was before. Mm. The Kelsey I've become is a different person to who I was before. So I've never gone back to that person. Yeah. But to be not even okay with it, because I don't think I'm ever going to be okay with the fact that I lost Tom.
Well, grief stays with you, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I always talk about grief, because your grief will never get bigger. Your grief will never get smaller. You learn to live around your grief, and that is it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do have to go and do the school run and go out and make sure my kids are okay. And I will do podcasts and I will have a smile on my face. Yeah. That doesn't mean that I'm still not grieving for Tom. And I think people forget about that. They're so quick to judge. Yeah. But you haven't actually walked in my shoes. You don't know how I feel. You don't know what I look like at home. You may see on Instagram a 2-minute video of me. That's not reality either.
Let's talk about that, actually, because you have bravely. Like, you share a lot. You do podcasts like this, and you've come under criticism for it. I mean, social media is bad at the best of times, right? What type of things are you dealing with?
It's really weird because when Tom was alive, my Instagram handle used to be something different. And I just went to Tom one day, I went, I'm going to change my name to Being Kelsey. And he was like, all right, are you? I was like, yeah, because I feel like I'm an authentic person and I'm such a sharer. So I feel like I need to show everyone that I'm just being me. And it couldn't be any more perfect for me now, because when you come onto my Instagram, you are getting me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been really trolled, judged.
Do you ever think about not sharing?
No, because it's not about them people. It's about the people that I'm actually helping that will take something. You know, even doing this podcast, someone will take something from this podcast and I can help someone. So many people that message me, DM me, asking me for advice. They may have someone who's going through cancer. They want to know the alternative program I put into place. There's so much good that I have given to other people that I don't care about the trolls. Like, you are small-minded. You are vibrating at such a low vibration. It's not nice to other people around me to read what people put.
Do you read the comments?
If I really want to punish myself, I'll read it. But do you know what? Not so much on my socials. I have such an incredible community that I've built of people that support me. But, you know, if I do a TV show, it will be people judging that of like me moving on. News outlets, I would say, are probably the worst.
Yes.
They are the worst. If you're ever on a news outlet, just don't read it.
It always makes you feel like
you would be like, am I actually a parasite to the world? Because this person's saying I'm a parasite. Am I? What have I done that's so bad?
I can confirm you're absolutely not a parasite.
Joanne from Manchester thinks I'm a parasite.
Do you feel like it's your responsibility to share and talk about death and grief and how you're coping or not coping?
I just feel like I've got to have been sent this for a reason. There's got to be a reason why this stuff happens to me.
Yeah.
And I just think as well, Tom passed the baton over to me because he was doing so much in the brain tumour community. Because again, if we're discussing brain tumours, they only get 1% of national funding. He did a whole Stand Up to Cancer gig and raised so much money. So I feel like he passed the baton and was like, here you go, Kels, like, you can do the work now. And that's what I feel like I've done for him. And also, the one thing we are guaranteed in this lifetime is to die. Like, it is one thing. You're guaranteed to be born and you're guaranteed to die.
And yet,
but we don't talk about death. But it's like, but we're all going to die. You could die at 100. You could die at, you know, Phoenix.
We're all going to have loved ones who will die, and like, not being prepared. It's crazy, isn't it, really?
It's a topic that you all need to talk about. You should all be talking about it in your homes. I mean, I laugh and call us the Addams family, but we do talk about death. And even for me and Tom, you know, when we did sit there and do our mortgage and decide to get the cover,
yeah,
it was a topic that we needed to talk about because one of us was going to die. And I think also to protect your children, it's not even about you, it's to protect your children that are here.
Yeah, yeah. And have they been a huge motivation to you to keep going, to deal with your grief, to carry on?
Yeah, without a doubt. The kids are my driving force behind everything that I do.
The last year or so, you have developed a brilliant relationship with a great guy called Will.
Yeah.
And, well, actually, talking about backlash, etc., is that one of the things that people were coming to your social media to criticize as well?
I think everyone's obsessed with time, but what is time? Like, everyone puts a time stamp on it, but it's like, but I'd want more time with Tom. I didn't get the time. Like, we're all so obsessed with time, but time doesn't mean anything.
No.
We're not anyone's judge. I can't judge your life and what your decisions you've chosen to make. Like, that's you. You're living your life. The way the world is, you can now go onto someone's social media, go onto news outlets and actually comment on their life.
But no one's been feeling how you've been feeling. And like, one day to you also would feel like a month, a year to someone else or vice versa. Like,
and even with the loss of Tom, like, we're coming on 4 years. But it literally feels like yesterday. But then sometimes I sit there and be like, oh my God, I feel like I've not seen him in a lifetime. Yeah. Like, you feel so differently. And you brought up about, you know, my children. My children deserve happiness.
100%.
And happiness.
So do you.
Yeah, me too. I do deserve happiness.
I'm quite a big believer in that things happen at a certain time when they're supposed to happen, yeah. Right? And the judgment.
Obviously, I massively believe in the universe. And I think as well, the universe will only give you what you can cope with. And quite clearly, when people say you're resilient, but I can cope. And I think that's why the universe has given me this, because I can cope with it.
And most people would shy away from it. And I do think, I was going to ask you if you think it's almost like your calling, your purpose, your like why you're here is to share about such things.
I think just to help people. That's why I've been put here. Like, you know, even the brain tumour world now, baby loss, so much. Grief, death, the whole lot together, the package.
But it does just feel like it is like what you're supposed to share about and the amount of people you'll be helping. But fast forwarding even a little bit more, what you've had to deal with recently with Phoenix, your son, being born whilst asleep. I mean, how
but
much...
But again, we say about the sleeping, right?
Oh, that, I know.
He was born dead. He was not born sleeping, because my friend, I tried to do the he was born sleeping.
Yeah.
She went, oh, that's so lovely. I've never known a baby born sleeping before. He must have been so relaxed. And I had to message him, be like, no, he was born dead. She was like, oh my God, and rung me and was like, Kelsey, I am so sorry. But she didn't understand.
But I heard you say about him being born sleeping because it felt right in some context to say
think
that.
To shelter everyone else. If I'd have just come out and been like, Phoenix was born dead, people would be like, oh. And I think with me, they know that I've gone through so much that they're like, how can she actually go through anymore?
Well, can we just almost explain for those who don't know, you carried Phoenix through 9-month pregnancy, healthy pregnancy.
Healthy pregnancy, and it was I had him a week before due date.
The due date, yeah.
Yeah, and he came into the world and he was dead. And I know it's such a shock for everyone. And it was a massive shock for us. It was a massive shock. But again, I'm just trying to make light of this. There's got to be a reason.
How could you turn to that so quickly after like the unthinkable has happened?
Because I think I've been through the unthinkable, that it's like, it's so tough to even try and make a positive. And things with Phoenix, we never knew we was having a boy or a girl. But we'd always decided on Phoenix as the name. And it was like the rising of the ashes. And
was it a bit of like you being the Phoenix? You,
yeah.
You rising from everything you've been through.
Yeah, and now I'm having to rise again. He's actually come to me for a reason, and he picked me to be his mum for a reason. And there's a bigger picture as to why.
Yeah.
Because really, if you turn to the negative, then what is the point?
Well,
what is the point of life if you turn to the negative? Because I would literally have no purpose, have no reason. Like, obviously my two children, but I've been through so much. Like, I've lost their dad. I've lost my best friend, my soulmate. I've now lost a baby. There's so much loss. So I need to make a positive of everything.
Your mindset is exceptional. Like, the way that you are just thinking about all this positively, I'm sure there's dark days.
Of course there is.
Days that you can't get out of bed and days that you don't want to talk to anyone, let alone do a podcast and talk about death. But generally, are you just like glass half full, like I have to carry on, there is good to come from this?
Honestly, that's how I do get up and I start the day. And I share a lot of positivity online because that's all I've got.
Yeah.
Positive thought. I can control my own thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So positivity has to be behind it.
Yeah.
Take the kids to school and be on the school run. Like, my kids are my everything. So, you know, even after losing Phoenix, I think the people, like the other parents at school, must have thought, here she is, the old nutter, because I was there like 3 days after, because I needed to show my kids, I'm there for you. I'm going to show up for you every day. And we're going to get through this together. And also, it's ripping that plaster off. Because if I hadn't gone to the school, Because it was literally just Phoenix passed a few weeks before actually they were going to break up for the summer. To me, I was like, I need to go there before, because then everyone's going to see me after the summer and they're not going to be able to talk to me. Whereas when everyone saw me outside of the school, and I always give the school gate as, you know, I talk about that all the time because I think that's, obviously you spend a lot of the time at the school gate. And I think when the other parents saw me, they were like, right, she's here, we're here, we've got to put on, we're going to do this together. And, you know, loads of them obviously came over, hugged me. We had a cry and they were devastated for us as a family. But yeah. I need to just show up before my children.
The way you've dealt with this and continue to deal with it, because it's so recent as well, I think it's also like, this is how you're dealing with this grief at the moment, but someone else's grief might look very different.
Yeah, and that's okay. If you feel like you can't get out of bed and you need to be in your pajamas for the next 12 weeks, you do that, because that's how you're dealing with it. Don't look at me and think, wow, Kelsey's on the school run, I need to be doing that. No, I can do that, but that's okay too. You need to do what's best for you. And, you know, even when I lost Tom, there's a lot of parents that have lost children that I've gone through grief with, other widows. And, you know, there was a lady and she didn't get changed out of her pyjamas for 6 weeks. And I was like, that is absolutely fine.
And I think it's important to say that you're not here saying, I'm absolutely fine, this is how you should deal with grief. Like, you can definitely go pick your kids up from school the next week. Not at all. But this is how Kelsey deals with it. And like,
I'm not you. It's just that judgment, isn't it? It's all back to that judgment, because you feel like you're getting judged. But if you can't get on with it, that's fine. If you feel like you need the therapy, the counselling, that's also okay.
Yeah. Have you had therapy?
I am so down a different path to other people.
Yeah.
That one, in our house, there's so much therapy because we are very open, we're very honest, and we talk about it. I said to Will, you don't need to go to therapy because we have Aurelia Parker.
Your daughter.
Yeah.
Is she like asking you all the questions?
Well, especially when we lost Phoenix, it was the why. Why? No one could satisfy her answer of what she needed. And I was like, but I don't know what to say to you because there is no answer, Ray. Like, he was born dead and he's not here. So what can me and Will do?
Talking about being in the public eye again, you obviously were 9 months pregnant and then you weren't, but you didn't have a baby. How did you think about what you were going to share online?
And do you know what? I think that has been really hard because I didn't have an option. Whereas when Tom died, I could have ran away and hid a bit more. But after losing Phoenix, it was like, well, I've got to let everyone know because I'm going to be out and then not have a baby, but have been pregnant. And people go, where's the baby? So it's that, you know, even I couldn't even go over to the ice cream man outside the school because I was like, every week they've asked me how many weeks you got to go, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, how can I go over them and be like, the baby didn't make it?
What, how have you dealt with that? What have you
done?
I've
got an ice cream. It's been really sad. The kids, all they want is a 99.
They're not getting it for some time.
No, but you know what? Even my mum had a client come the other day and she hadn't seen this lady. And the lady was like, how's the baby? Our mum was like, there isn't a baby. The baby died. And then he was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
You have to take on a lot of other people's feelings, though, don't you? Like,
that's what I think when you are navigating death, loss, grief. It's everyone else. Like, I always spoke about it. People crossed the road when Tom died. They couldn't actually face me. They didn't know what to say. They didn't know how to react to me. My favourite thing is to talk about Tom. Mm. So I want to celebrate Tom. I want to celebrate the life he had. He's my, you know, the father of my children. So I always want to talk about Tom, but we don't know as a nation what to say. So in the end, we just say nothing, which is sort of worse because I was so isolated and felt alone.
What should they say,
and
Kelsey?
I think even with Phoenix, it was a bit more like people wanted answers, but I can't give them an answer. I think just go and be there for the person. And I think you can pick up on whether they want to talk about it or not. Or just say like, how are you? Well, what do you want, the last 5 minutes, the last 20 minutes? Like, what do you want? How I woke up this morning?
Yeah, so for someone, for example,
how are you right now?
What should they say? Should they say, what do you need? Do you want them not to say, how are you? Do you want them to just give you a hug?
Do you know what? My friends are so great at just being there for me. They're just there. And they would turn up at my house and just be there.
Mm.
I think being there and doing things that that person might need.
Yeah.
They thought of everything. Especially with Phoenix, it's like we'd all been through it before and they went back into the same routine as what they did with Tom. I had friends that came and done the 6 a.m. shift and then some came and did the 6 p.m. shift and were really there for me. And I think if your friend is going through it, you just need to go and be there and let them talk.
Yeah, hold space for them.
Hold space. And the question, how are you, is that is a big question to ask. And you think that that's the right one to ask, but maybe it's not.
So, for example, would you rather someone come, you don't want them to avoid you, right?
Don't avoid because you already feel horrendous. You know, if you know that person's a hugger, maybe go and put your arm around them and hug them.
But you are not a hugger.
I'm not a hugger. And I get really like, then overwhelmed. And I'm like, oh my God, am I going to cry that they've now hugged me? Like, actually, a lady that works at my children's school, when I went there after Phoenix, she came up and hugged me straight away. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, it was a lot for me because it was that. And she just felt horrendous. Everyone just felt, you know that everyone feels them emotions for you.
Yeah. And for you, might not be the same for everyone, of course, but you are very happy to talk about Tom and Phoenix rather than avoiding the conversation.
Yeah, I want to talk. I want to have them conversations and celebrate them. Life's about celebrating.
The fact that you can say that so soon after Phoenix and everything that's happened with Tom is incredible. How do you feel for the future, for the next few months, the next few years?
Please, universe, just give me a break. Please, I'm just hoping for a break. And
what does that look like for you? No drama.
No drama.
No just, loss.
Yeah. Just please, just some nice moments, some happy moments. You know, after we did lose Phoenix, we went away as a family and we needed that holiday, that break. And have the holidays. Do what you want. Get the life cover. It's true, though. It takes a massive weight off everything.
Really?
It really does. Having these things in place and we don't want to think about it and we don't want to talk about it. But having the critical, the life insurance, knowing that even if you got injured, that you can be covered.
Yeah. And it's protecting against the worst things that can happen, right?
And then worst things do happen because look at me. I am living proof that the worst things do happen. Tom was 33 when he died. 33. And you might think, oh my God, you know, you're paying into a critical cover. But it is worth it. Every penny you spend is worth it because we needed it.
Because your nightmare would be even worse.
It was life-changing, but it was also life-changing for us to have that because it gave me time to breathe, to think. And I know now that if anything happens to me, because it could, my kids are okay.
Yeah.
They're going to be okay. Me and Tom have made sure that they're okay. So if you're even doubting it, don't. Get out. Get the cover.
What would you say to anyone who's listening to your story, maybe for the first time today, or someone that's followed you for a while? What would you want them to take from everything you've been through?
Life is tough. I am resilient. You can be resilient. But, and also just enjoy every moment that you have here. And I think we're all so wrapped up in our phones and work and having the best things in life. But we are not all promised. You know, Tom said this, we're not all promised tomorrow. So live for today and seize every opportunity. I always say, feel the fear. Feel the fear and do it anyway because you're not promised tomorrow. So live for today.
Mm. And don't judge.
And a little less judgment, a little more kindness.
100%. Well, Kelsey.
These are the quotes. Take them.
This has been the most incredible conversation. I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast, being the first guest and sharing so beautifully, honestly and I know you'll have helped so many people with your story and how you talk about it, and you really are an inspiration. So just thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Pretty Covered. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to follow or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. To learn more about planning ahead and financially protecting the people you love, visit the link in our show notes or head to polly.co.uk. See you next time. Pretty Covered is a podcast brought to you by Polly, a trading style of Candid Insurance Services Limited, which is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. The content of this podcast is meant to be informational, and it should not be considered as financial advice. Terms and conditions may apply.